The views and opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent the views and opinions of WEFT-FM, Prairie Air Incorporated, Station Management, the Board of Directors, or the WEFT Associates. And now here is this week's edition of IMC Radio News.
Why do we produce the IMC Radio News?
Because the chasm isn't left to right. It's top to bottom.
To give voice to people who aren't heard.
To bust up the myth of objective journalism.
Bill O'Reilly does not have a monopoly on the truth.
To build our community and re-educate the public.
To revive the voice of organized labor.
To bring forth debate so as to animate democracy.
Because I want to agitate for revolution.
Listen to the voices of your community on IMC Radio News.
This week on IMC Radio News, we have recordings of two events from this weekend celebrating the courage and sacrifice of people fighting for equality and freedom during the 1960s. Stay tuned.
They will tell their lion stories, send their dogs to bite our bodies. They will lock us in their prisons. Carry it on. But all their lies will be forgotten. All their dogs will lie there rotten. And their prison walls will crumble. Carry it on.
Cope Cumston brings us our first story, focusing on events this weekend which paid tribute to the struggle of students of color at the University of Illinois in the late 60s. The background music under this piece is provided by the University of Illinois Black Chorus, which performed at the event.
This past weekend at the University of Illinois, there was a remarkable series of events to commemorate the 35th anniversary of Project 500, which brought to the campus as freshmen 565 students, primarily African American, as the first group under the Special Educational Opportunities Program, SEOP. This courageous group of people and the administrators who made it possible more than doubled the number of African American students at the university in 1968. The story of Project 500 is full of personal and institutional challenges, including the recruiting of these students, who came mostly from Chicago, but from all over the country as well. When 565 students arrived on campus, there were many needs that hadn't been fully anticipated, including enough dorm rooms and financial aid. Feelings were high, and the students demanded that the university fulfill its promises. At the end of the first week the students were on campus, they confronted the administration with these demands by occupying the Illini Union. And in the early hours of September 9th, over 250 students were arrested during this protest. Last Thursday night, over 700 undergraduates joined to walk from the Illinois Street Residence Hall to the Union to commemorate the journey of the black students who pioneered for equal rights in those stormy days following the dramas of the Civil Rights Movement. At the Union on Saturday was a celebration of the stories of Project 500 and the unveiling of a mural painted by Billy Morrow Jackson, which you can see in the African American Cultural Center, which was established as one of the 41 demands of the Black Student Association in 1968. People came from all over the country last weekend to share their memories and pay tribute to a program that changed the face of the University of Illinois forever.
University of Illinois Chancellor Nancy Cantor.
Because what is odd, and Joy and Jim and I were just talking about this, what is odd about educational institutions is that as much as we know that we are the gateway to opportunity and to justice, we have a hard time opening our gates. We have a hard time changing. We are conserving institutions at heart, and all of you know that far better than I, because that's what you faced, many of you, when you came to the prairie from all over this country. But what it most means, what it meant then and means now, is that as much as education is a private good in that it ensures some economic and social mobility, it's really at heart a public good. And a great public university has to be here for as many talented people as it can. And it has to be a place where people walk from the campus to the community and to communities all around the country. And one of the most amazing pieces of Project 500 was really its road back into communities. So in Holmes County, Mississippi, which sent 17 freshmen to the first Project 500 class, students went back to start a countywide summer reading program after their first year on campus. They called it Project Grassroots. It is my sincere hope for students here today that they feel that same sense of both opportunity and responsibility to go back, to go back out. Just like John. Ooh. 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 So as I move to John Lee Johnson, I want to pause again and note the role of community activism in pushing institutions to change. And it isn't always easy, and it's not always well received on the outside or on the inside of the academy. But he's been doing it for his whole life. So this afternoon, we honor Mr. Johnson for all he does to push us to do better, and for all he does to say that at the end of the day, we have to be partners, hard as it is for each side to put out their hand. So let's have a round of applause for struggle.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. I wonder, is that really me? It wouldn't be like me if I didn't leave with some parting words that I think that are important. I'm on the chancellor every day. Every time I see her, I'm on her back. She says, give me time, John, and I said, we don't have time. But let me say this to the African-Americans and the people of color in this room. If our nation is going to be changed, it's going to be changed by you. The sacrifices that were made in 68 was to give our people, our race, an opportunity to participate in changing our nation. The danger that we have is not that white people are going to send us back to the 50s. The real danger is that black people will lose interest in fighting for themselves and coming to the table of our nation as equal partners. You are the real threat to our success, not white people. And I hope you understand the value of this place and what it offers you. I mean, I got to the table the hard way, not because I had an education, you're able to get to the table because you'll have that education and you'll have it from a great university, this university. But if you refuse to recommit yourselves or commit yourselves to changing this nation for the betterment of your race and for the betterment of this nation, then it's not going to be a happy place to live. And the responsibility is not on the chancellor, it is on you. All she can help you do is prepare yourself to go out into the world and to defend America and defend your race. This is what I hope that those who came to Project 500 went back and done. And I hear from many of the people who are here today and who were here last night, all the great stories of going back and creating projects from the experiences that they got here. And I can tell you by going through my neighborhood and the changes that were made there through the partnerships that we created with the University of Illinois and the School of Architecture and the Planning Department, we changed that ghetto into a modern place for African-American people to live. And I'm hoping that you will take that kind of experience back to your neighborhood and back to your community, because your bank won't do it for you. Your public schools will not do it, and your local governments will not do it. You will have to do it. But the great thing about being here is that you can learn how to do it. And if you pay attention to, and I'll be honest, your faculty is not going to tell you how to do it either, because they don't know how to do it. But the university does have the answers. It's hidden in the libraries, it's hidden in the various reports, and it's even hidden among people who do know how to do it, but they're not necessarily the people who are going to be standing up in front of you every day. You must be hungry to want to know the truth, hungry to find the answers, and then even more hungrier to carry it back to your people. And I thank you for this honor. Thank you very much.
In 1947, the Congress of Racial Equality planned a journey of reconciliation designed to test the Supreme Court's 1946 decision in the Irene Morgan case, which declared segregated seating of interstate passengers unconstitutional. An interracial group of passengers met with heavy resistance in the Upper South. Some members of the group served on a chain gang after their arrest in North Carolina. The journey of reconciliation quickly broke down. Nearly a decade and a half later, John F. Kennedy was elected president. To test the president's commitment to civil rights, the Congress of Racial Equality proposed a new journey of reconciliation, dubbed the Freedom Ride. The strategy was the same. An interracial group would board buses destined for the South. The whites would sit in the back, and the blacks in the front. At rest stops, the whites would go into blacks-only areas, and vice versa. This was not civil disobedience, really, explained Corps member James Farmer, quote, because we were merely doing what the Supreme Court said we had a right to do, end quote. On Mother's Day, May 14th, the Freedom Riders split into two groups to travel through Alabama. The first group was met by a mob of about 200 angry people in Anniston. The mob stoned the bus and slashed the tires. The bus managed to get away, but when it stopped about 6 miles out of town to change the tires, it was firebombed. The other group did not fare any better. It was greeted by a mob in Birmingham, and the riders were severely beaten. Birmingham's Public Safety Commissioner, Bull Connor, claimed he posted no officers at the bus depot because of the holiday. However, it was later discovered that the FBI knew of the planned attack and that the city police stayed away on purpose. Alabama Governor John Patterson offered no apologies, explaining, quote, when you go somewhere looking for trouble, you usually find it. You just can't guarantee the safety of a fool, and that's what these folks are, just fools, end quote. Of the original 13 Freedom Riders, only 4 are alive today. 3 of those riders spoke Saturday to about 100 people in Lincoln Hall Auditorium in an event sponsored by the Project 500 Reunion Committee and the Brown v. Board Commemoration Committee. Kimberly Cranick has provided audio segments from that discussion. The first is Ben Cox, who grew up in Kankakee, taught in Champaign-Urbana, and now lives in Tennessee.
But you're looking at a man who is an ordained minister, preaching since I was 17. I'm 72. And since I realized what segregation was at the age of 4, I have never had one day of total freedom in the land of the free and the home of the brave. I've either been discriminated against or heard about it or listened to other confessions about it. But yet, I love America. As far as I'm concerned, it's the greatest country on earth. If you find one better, call me Clegg.
The next speaker is Ed Blankenheim, who is in the Marine Corps and who now lives in San Francisco.
I had a very good friend. His name was Richard. He was really a friend. I loved that man probably as much as I've ever loved anyone. Richard and I went to South Carolina and took our boot camp. We spent probably 3 weeks to a month in Camp Lejeune before we decided one day to go to town. We got on a bus which came right past our barracks in the Marine Corps. It was obviously integrated at that point. We got on a bus. We sat right behind, Richard and I, sat right behind the driver. We were just having one hell of a time until we cleared the main gate. The driver pulled into a turnaround spot, got up using the microphone, and said, "Okay, now all you niggers, move to the back of the bus." My friend Richard was so humiliated. He just wanted to hide. He wanted to crawl underneath the seat. So the bus driver said to him, "Nigger, I said, get to the back of the bus." I was livid. It going out of my mind. I couldn't believe this. I could not believe that the Marine Corps would allow this to happen. At that point, he put his hand outside the window, and two MPs came aboard. One white, one black. The white MP took a pink card out of his vest pocket and read the following: "The United States Marine Corps are guests of the great state of North Carolina, and as such, we're going to go with the local customs." The MP said, "Now, you two can get back in the bus and go back to camp, or you can go on to Jacksonville. Richard would have to ride in the very back seat because the bus driver was mad, and I would have to ride in the very front seat." Well, obviously, there wasn't much of a contest there. So we got on the bus, came back to the base. Richard crawled into his bunk. He couldn't look at me, couldn't talk to me. So the next morning I decided I had to go to see the commanding officer. He said, "Look, kid, don't even open your mouth. We've got a war to win, you and I. We cannot be concerned with the feelings of some poor nigger." He said, "Get the hell out of here." And he said, no, better head. Go see the goddamn chaplain." Chaplain said, I know you're right, but these changes don't come overnight." When the Freedom Ride came along, you knew that I had to go. It was 13 years between the time I left that commanding officer's office and the Freedom Ride. Hank said earlier this evening, "You see Ed Blankenheim over there? He didn't have to go." And I said, "No, that's not true. I had to go."
The final speaker is Hank Thomas, who was a medic in the Army and who now lives in Atlanta.
And a few years ago, a reporter asked me, and I recounted the situation between me and the North Vietnamese soldier, how he embraced me, invited me to his home, and that of the citizen of Anniston, Alabama, who wouldn't shake my hand. And he said to me, and it has stuck with me ever since, he said, "The North Vietnamese soldier tried to kill you because of the color of the uniform you were wearing. The white guy from Anniston, Alabama, still hates you because of the color that you are."
In this final segment, Hank Thomas and Ed Blankenheim relate the experience of being on the bus that was firebombed.
Regarding the idea of being killed, sometime on some of these panels, I kind of maybe disappoint some of my colleagues who can be so eloquent, and the one that comes to mind is Congressman John Lewis. And Congressman John Lewis, who obviously is a rather sainted person as far as the civil rights movement is concerned, but he's very fond of saying that we knew we were going to die and we were prepared to die. And sometime I had the unfortunate opportunity to go after John Lewis, and I said I was 19 years old and I had no intentions of dying and had no idea that we were in for the kinds of things that we were in for. Obviously, the only time that I truly felt that I was going to die was when Ed and I were on that bus and it was burning and had filled up with smoke, and the people outside were holding the door and would not let us out. I knew that if we got out of that bus, the mob was going to beat us to death. So it was a choice to me at age 19 of deciding, and I'm not being overly dramatic when I say this, of deciding exactly how I was going to die. So I decided, obviously, just a couple of seconds, that it was probably more preferable to die aboard the bus, and that for some reason I thought that all I had to do was to inhale that poisonous smoke, and in, you know, just a few breaths I would pass out and then it would be all over. So I had made that decision at that particular time that I was going to die. Again, it wasn't a question of courting martyrdom, but it was a matter of facing the inevitable and perhaps going out with a little bit of dignity.
Before you get away, I want to say that I was on that bus with Hank, and Bert Bigelow had been a commander in the United States Navy during World War II, and he was also a freedom rider. So he told us to lay down on the floor and breathe as close to the floor as you possibly could. This horrendous black cloud just kept coming down inch by inch, and I imagine it probably got all the way to us before Hank made a dash at the door. Now, they were trying to hold us in, and he came up with a superhuman effort and got that door open. He wasn't rewarded for it, to hit him in the head with a baseball bat, but he at least got that door open, and we were able to go out into a screaming mob.
The Freedom Riders never made it to New Orleans. Many spent their summer in jail. Some were scarred for life from the beatings they received, but their efforts were not in vain. They forced the Kennedy administration to take a stand on civil rights. In addition, the Interstate Commerce Commission, at the request of Robert Kennedy, outlawed segregation in interstate bus travel in a ruling more specific than the original Supreme Court mandate that took effect in September of 1961. The Freedom Riders may not have finished their trip, but they made an important and lasting contribution to the civil rights movement.
What's that I hear now ringing in my ears? I've heard that sound before. What's that I hear now ringing in my ears? I hear it more and more. It's the sound of freedom calling,
ringing up to the skies. It's the sound of the old ways of falling.
That wraps up IMC Radio News for this week. Contributors to this program were Cope Cumpston and Kimberly Kranick. The coordination of the UCIMC Radio News is funded by the Funding Exchange's Paul Robeson Fund for Independent Media. If you'd like to get involved with this show, drop us a line at radio@ucimc.org or call 344-8820 extension 1. No experience is necessary. Archives of this program are available at the IMC website, www.ucimc.org. Take care and see you next week.
It's the light of the old ways of falling. You can see it if you try. You can see it if you try. Hey, what's that I feel now beating in my heart? I felt that beat before. Hey, what's that I feel now beating in my heart? I feel it more and more. It's the rumble of freedom calling, climbing up to the skies. It's the rumble of the old ways of falling. You can feel it if you try. You can feel it if you try.